Hi, everybody. This is Yeehaw Bob Jackson from Port Orleans Riverside at Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. And you're listening to the Stories of the Magic.
Welcome to Stories of the Magic, an unofficial Disney podcast with your host, Randy Crane. Hear stories from Disney cast members, Imagineers, artists, and more right here on Stories of the Magic. And now, here's your host, Randy Crane.
Welcome to episode 10 of Stories of the Magic. We've made it to the double digits. I'm Randy, your host. Thank you for joining me. Today we have the first part of my interview with David Smith. Yes, I do a lot of two-part episodes, but I want to give every one of my guests a chance to share what they want, while not having excessively long episodes for you, the listeners. You know, I think the two-part episodes are a great way to do both, but I'd love to hear your thoughts too. David grew up in the shadow of the Matterhorn, down the street from Disneyland. He had a few different roles in his 6 years working there and loved it. You can hear it in the way he talks about his time there. He's especially got some great stories related to one of the most overlooked attractions in Disneyland, the Davy Crockett Explorer canoes. Since then, he's co-written the Hidden Mickey series of books, a fiction action-adventure series. Think National Treasure meets Disneyland, and you've got the idea. Sometimes Dead Men Do Tell Tales is the first in this series of action-adventure mysteries about Walt Disney and Disneyland, written with the adult reader in mind, but age-appropriate for those 10 and up. Hidden Mickey was the first book of this type written for the adult-level reader. It was also the first mystery based on historical fiction as it relates to Walt Disney and Disneyland. In May of 2011, David released Hidden Mickey 5, Chasing New Frontiers. Then this year, In the Shadow of the Matterhorn was released. This book is David's look at Disneyland from the perspective of living very close to the park, working at the park, and the life-changing effect that Disneyland has on so many. Listen to the interview, then go get the books. Before we begin the interview, let me remind you of the announcements I made last week, and add one more new and exciting one. First, in celebration of the beginning of my second year as the sponsor of and official travel provider for Tales from the Mouse House podcast, I joined Alan Joyce in episode 53 to talk a bit about the holidays at Disneyland, share a new story about cruise sailing soon that you won't want to miss, and announce a contest. Second, I'm participating in the Chalk Disneyland Resort Walk in the Park to raise money for Children's Hospital of Orange County. This is my sixth year walking and raising money for this organization. My goal is to raise at least $500, so if you'd be willing to help me exceed that goal, please go to storiesofthemagic.com/chalkwalk2012 to read a bit about it and sponsor me. Any amount, large or small, is appreciated. Now the new announcement is a blog that I want to tell you about. If you're a fan of Stories of the Magic, then you'll want to visit my friend Debbie's new blog, Making Magic and Memories. You'll read stories from current and former cast members on how they made magic for their guests, as well as from some guests who've had magic made. She already has some great stories posted, and she'll be sharing more that people have sent in, so add this to your regular blog reading. While you're at it, I'm sure she'd love to hear from you too, so go to makingmagicandmemories.com and send her a story. Now, a brief word from a fellow podcaster and friend, and then it's time to turn the page and start this story.
My name is Al.
And I'm Joyce.
And we're huge Disneyland fans. In fact, we love the Disneyland Resort so much, we host a podcast dedicated to the happiest place on Earth to share that passion with others.
That's right. On our show, Tales from the Mouse House Disneyland Podcast, we share current resort news, some tips and tricks we've learned over the years to help make your Disneyland Resort vacation the most magical experience ever. We uncover little-known and often overlooked gems we like to call hidden treasures, and even review the attractions and places to eat that make the Disneyland Resort so much fun.
And if that wasn't enough, we even share some video episodes to help keep you in that Disney magic state of mind. If you're a longtime fan of the Disneyland Resort, or you've just recently discovered the magic, this podcast is for you. You can find Tales from the Mouse House Disneyland podcast at www.talescast.com and in iTunes.
And remember,
make it a Mickey day.
And now, this week's interview on Stories of the Magic.
Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, "Many people die with their music still in them." I don't think he meant a literal song, but we've all got something in us to share. Maybe a song, maybe a book, maybe something else. Maybe it's making magic for guests as a Disneyland cast member. My guest today has done at least two of those. David Smith has worked at Disneyland as a cast member, and he's written not one, but several books. His most recent are Part 5 in the Hidden Mickey's Adventure series and a nonfiction book about his days working at the park called In the Shadow of the Matterhorn. David, welcome to Stories of the Magic.
Thank you, Randy. Glad to be here.
Thank you. So as we start out here, can you tell me a little bit about how you got started at Disneyland and what you did there?
Well, ironically, my next-door neighbor had worked in the costume department. This was back when I was about 19 years old. He was about 10 years older than me. And he said, "Hey, why don't you head over to Disneyland and try and get a job over there?" And I did, and went down to the administration office and filled out an application. Unfortunately, I put on my application that I would not be able to work weekends because I, at the time, was playing collegiate tennis, and we had a lot of tournaments and whatnot. So, of course, I came back, and he said, "Well, you know, how'd the application go?" I told him what happened. He says, "You walk back down there, and you put on your application, you can work weekends." So I immediately went back to a new application because chances are I wouldn't have got a job working at Disneyland if I couldn't work weekends for obvious reasons. That's their busy time of the year or week. And so I it wasn't any problem for me because I could get a shift change or anything like that if I needed to have a weekend off. So that's exactly what I did. And lo and behold, they called me up the next day and said, "Can you come on down for an interview?" And hence I got the job that next day and started work, I believe, 2 days later.
Nice. Very nice.
Well, was it a real, there was a lot of irony in, the fact that when I was a kid, and I kind of alluded to this both in my Hidden Mickey 5 book as well as Shadow of the Matterhorn, when I was a kid, we would, having grown up right down the street, we would ride our bikes down and go into the park either with our family or friends. And we'd go into Tom Sawyer Island and play ditch them, hide and seek, whatever you want to call it. Well, we would always sit on the little pier that they had on Tom Sawyer's Island, and a canoe went by us. And I can remember to this day even the canoe ride operator in the back, how he flung his paddle over his head in a spinning motion and slapped the water and made a perfect spray of water land right at our feet from about 30 feet away. And I remember turning to my buddy, Tim, and I said, "Did you see that? That was so cool." And lo and behold, when I went in for my interview, the first job they offered, they said, "Well, how would you like to be a canoe ride operator?"
Perfect.
I still remember thinking, I didn't ask for it. I basically went in there saying, I'll take whatever job you want. I do remember them asking me, how do I like working with people? And having been a top level tennis player and playing in front of large groups and large spectators, I really was fairly comfortable with large groups of people. And I sort of said that in a way, and they said, okay. And they came back and said, "Well, how would you like to work the canoe ride?" And hence that started my 6 years working at Disneyland.
Nice. So that was the thing that really got you interested in working for Disney, was that moment on Tom Sawyer Island with the canoe operator.
Well, my history went way back. I grew up maybe a mile and a half south of Disneyland in the city of Garden Grove. So I was down there a lot. We, as kids, would ride our bikes down to the Disneyland Hotel. We would hang out around there. It was just something to do. And then we eventually would take the tram over to the main gate and kind of look through the fence at kind of feeling like, oh, I wish we had enough money to go in. Never did. But, you know, I alluded to this in Shadow of the Matterhorn. I think my history started before that, because we were looking through the fence one day, and a family came up to us who were leaving the park, and they asked us, hey, we're leaving. We've got a whole bunch of tickets. Would you like them? This was back in the day of the ticket books. And we hadn't even been in the park. We weren't planning to go in the park. We didn't have any money. But, of course, we didn't turn them down. We said, sure, we'd love to have the tickets. So we started kind of a collection of tickets every time we'd go down there, of asking people as they left if they had any leftover tickets. So we actually had quite a collection of tickets at the time. So when we did actually go to the park, we had plenty of tickets to go on the rides we wanted to go on. So it kind of stemmed from really a youthfulness of having Disneyland in your backyard and enjoying the park, probably taking it a little bit for granted. And but we loved being around people and meeting people, and certainly where else, what better place than to meet people than Disneyland.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Do you still have any of those tickets, or did you use them all up as a kid?
Still have a lot of, actually framed a lot of them. Some of the, ironically, when I was working in the park, it was right when they were transitioning out of tickets. This was about 1981. And I was working pirates and canoes and keelboats at the time, and they were just going to the unlimited use, but they're still taking ticket books. So occasionally when a very unique ticket came into my ride, it would sometimes find its way into my pocket because I thought, this might be a collector's item someday. And certainly there weren't a lot, but every so often you get one that was really old. I remember I have a D ticket that had the, I believe it was a D ticket when the new Tomorrowland opened. They had the old flying saucer ride, which was only there for, I believe, a year and a half. It just never operated well. But I do have a D ticket that had the flying saucer ride as one of the rides on the ticket. So that one's fairly rare. And there's a few, like the old Flight to the Moon, which later became Mission to Mars, which is, I believe now is where the pizza place is there next to the Space Mountain entrance. So, you get some of the really old ones that were kind of a little more obscure. And I have a few of those that I've framed and have as part of my own personal collection, as well as given some out to some friends of mine that, love the park as much as I did.
Oh, very cool. Now, you had several roles when you worked at Disneyland, right?
I did. Yeah.
What all did you do there?
Well, as I mentioned, I was hired on the canoe ride and worked canoes for probably 2 years. And then they asked me if I wanted to train on Pirates of the Caribbean, which, of course, after 2 years of working a pretty high manual labor ride, which was great in a sense that, the canoes, you actually had to paddle, and it usually was left up to the ride operators to move the canoes because the guests hardly ever paddled well enough to really move us quickly.
So, right.
We ended up getting, a good workout in. But, 2 years later, I was kind of ready to try something else. So I was trained on pirates and worked that, and then was later trained on keelboats, which, of course, were no longer there. The keelboats have an interesting history. A lot of people don't know that the keelboats were actually a ride that was not a ride specifically to be a ride. In fact, we were the lowest capacity ride in the park, if I recall, outside of maybe one of the Main Street vehicles, like the little fire truck that would go up and down. Because we only sat like 39 people in a boat, and we usually only had one boat going unless it was really busy, and then we had both the Gully Whopper and the Birth of May, which were the two little keelboats that were that would go around Tom Sawyer's Island. But the only reason they had the keelboats was it was the only boat that could tow the Mark Twain or the Columbia, the two big ships, if they stalled out in the river somewhere and couldn't come in on their own power. So these keelboats, of course, were not on the track and had enough torque to actually tow in either big boat if that ever happened, although in the years I worked there, that never happened. So never had to do that, but that was one of the main reasons why those keelboats were actually in operation at Disneyland. And we had a lot of flexibility, sort of like Jungle Cruise, although we weren't on a track. But we had a speedo, and we had a lot of flexibility because the river was large, and we could kind of go in different areas of the river around Tom Sawyer's Island and point things out and make create jokes. And we all had our sort of our own little ad-libs and our own little jokes that we would throw in there to make it more personable and certainly our own flavor, if you will.
Did you have an actual script to work from and then you ad-libbed, or did you guys just kind of come up with it on your own?
We did have, there was a SOP spiel. No one liked it. It was probably from 1958. It was very archaic in the sense that the jokes were not probably very funny. So we very seldom went by the SOP. In fact, our supervision even said, you know, as long as it's clean and as long as it's tasteful, you know, feel free to ad lib it. And in fact, if you ever went on the Kielbos back when they were in operation, there was one thing that we all were probably most famous for, probably because people could hear it because we were still at the dock usually as we said it, but we would always open the ride with a list of words, and it went something like this. And we would say, howdy, howdy, hi, all you pioneers, buccaneers, engineers, souvenirs, chandeliers, cashiers, boutonnieres, frontiers, racketeers, brigadiers, mountaineers, musketeers, 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 son-in-law, outlaws, grandmas, grandpas, cold swaths, attorneys, at law, big ones, little ones, Indian fighters, wild horse riders, city slickers, finger lickers, scalpels, city folks, salbusters, feather dusters, and all you lovely, lovely ladies, and all you other ladies too. Welcome aboard the Mike Teen Keelboats. And that
became
sort of our, originally it was, the original spiel just said pioneers and buccaneers and engineers and souvenirs and all you lovely, lovely ladies. And I sat on the dock one day kind of slow and while the boat was out, and I wrote down every word I could come up with that ended in ear. So hence the pioneer, buccaneer, engineer, souvenir, chandeliers, and so on. And so that sort of became the mainstay of the attraction, probably that a lot of people can remember that funny list of words that rhymed, and had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So you did canoes, pirates, keelboats,
and then
was
my
that
last,
it, or?
Yeah, well, my last okay. summer, I actually quit in 83 and rehired in 84 after my canoe team won the canoe races, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about, which is quite an event at the park. I went out as a winner, if you will, as we won the men's championship, and then I actually quit that day. We won the park championship, and then I found out my next summer I actually wasn't going to be traveling as much as I thought, so I rehired, and they hired me to drive the monorail. So I went from the low-key, the setting out in the wilderness, if you will, of the West Side operations to a high-tech, a little bit more very slick ride in the form of the monorail. And that was a lot of fun because the monorail is obviously very visible and operating that vehicle, which is the most expensive transportation vehicle in the park, was always a thrill. If it wasn't perhaps a little more boring in terms of there wasn't as much interaction with the guests, it was still a lot of fun to drive the actual vehicle and pull it into the station and do the day in and day out things that we did on the monorail as well.
Interesting. You also kind of went from as firmly rooted in the past as possible to as far in the future as possible. I mean, Frontierland is devoted to America's past, and it's the most historical-looking land in the park, really.
That's a great
even
point.
Going back far beyond Main Street, and then Tomorrowland and the monorail takes it to as far in the future as Disney goes.
I that's amazing that you mentioned that, Randy, because I literally had never put that association together, having gone from the two extremes of the continuum of time, certainly going to the more up-to-date or more futuristic mode of transportation, from probably the least technological ride being the canoes, where we had to actually mm-hmm. manually propel the canoes, to a ride that is associated with the future. So you're right, that's... I had never thought of that connection as far as my role in working in the park and working those two extremes. Good point.
Good. Thank you. You probably are one of the few people to have actually covered that continuum like that, too.
I would doubt very many because if you work in the same area, you never trained outside the area. In other words, at the time I worked there, and I believe it's still the same way, if you worked in New Orleans Bear Country, there were only certain rides you worked on. You weren't trained outside of that area. So you would have had to done what I did, and that would be to quit and rehire and be fortunate enough to be hired into a certainly a different area. I was a little surprised they didn't put me back in, although I didn't emphasize it. I sort of did want to work a different area because I had worked already 5 years in West Side operations that I did want to, and so that may have been the catalyst for them hiring me. I don't remember my interview on the second time around, but certainly it was an opportunity to do something different.
Sure, absolutely. So when you were doing the canoes in those first couple of years, did you practice that little paddle maneuver that you witnessed?
Absolutely. I prided myself on being able to, basically hit a tin can from 35 feet away with a stream of water from slapping the lake or the river with the paddle. The steers in the back of the canoe have a 5.5 foot paddle. Unlike all the guests, they have either a 4 foot or a 3.5 foot if they're a kid. And because we're in the back of the canoe, we could weld the paddle over our head behind us and spin it in our hand. And it looks sort of similar to, say, a samurai spinning a sword from one hand to the other. And as you would then grasp it over on the other side of the canoe, you would just simply flatten the blade out on the water, and it would produce that perfect stream and a straight line out in the direction you're aiming. And for years, it was always fun to take the canoe along the river and see people sitting either along on the benches or on the little docks as I did when I was a kid, and recreate what I had remembered. And I got to do that every day. Every day working, there's a lot. I'm sure every employer, every cast member can relate these, I don't want to say magical stories, but certainly things that stick with you. And I really enjoyed the fact that every trip, every opportunity opened that door for kind of pay it forward, kind of share what I had experienced with someone else. And maybe, who knows, someone else got inspired or wanted to do what I had done. Certainly, I think one of the greatest things of working at Disneyland is that ability through the park itself to share that magic that Walt envisioned, and to have people walk away going, that was special. And I think that was one of the greatest things I ever got to do every day, was try to make everyone that I came in contact with on a regular basis in the park as guests, was to make their vacation or their experience at Disneyland even more memorable than just the fact they're at Disneyland, that there was a human side to working in the park, and that human side brought something that was perhaps even more memorable than just a show or an audio animatronic figure or a joke or something like that. So it allowed us to really enjoy the park on that higher level, I think, of entertainment.
Wonderful. Yeah, the role of the cast member is as significant, if not more so, than the physical space. The physical space that you're in at Disneyland is great, but it was even Walt who said that you can dream, plan, and build the most, I can't remember the exact quote, but something along the lines of the most amazing, most perfect place in the world, but it takes people to make Absolutely. The dream a reality. And that's the guests and the cast members, both who are important in making that happen.
Well, the analogy, and certainly I think that's what Walt had in mind. I mean, we are technically on stage when we are cast members working at the park. And the park is not a theme park or an amusement park. We are on stage, and all of the rides, planters, buildings are all part of that stage, much like we would see at an elaborate Broadway act. But none of that is meaningful, really, without the actors portraying a story, a meaning, an emotion, what have you. And certainly it goes both ways, because if you were an actor performing to an empty audience, it would be very lacking for the actor. And so it is you nailed it. The fact that we need those guests to enjoy what we're doing, and then it's a win-win, and we walk away feeling we've done not just our job, but have done something more. And then, of course, the guests walk away with some memories that will hopefully last in a lifetime.
Right, definitely. Now, do you happen to remember the first time that you recreated that moment that you had witnessed or been a part of, but on the cast member side?
I can't, only because I think my first few weeks I was so intent on learning what I was doing, I wasn't yet loose enough, if you will, to really interact and remember how I was interacting. I know I was interacting, but I think it was more contrived because I was following a script, or I was, you know, trying to make sure I was saying the right thing. Like if it's the canoes, you have to say, hold your paddle, teach them how to paddle it by holding the paddle over your head, flatten over the water, blah, blah, blah. Well, I think after a few weeks and you get comfortable and confident in your role, that's when that real ability to enjoy it, as well as recognize you're doing it, and that is providing the magic. And certainly experience plays into that, because when you've done something that really clicks with the guests, you want to do it again. And so you learn things every day in the park, and every day was different. I mean, every single day you get 40, 50,000 different people in the park, and you get different personalities that come in. And there was always a mystery, if you will, of what to expect and how people would either react to the ride you're working or the day as a whole. And of course, the weather played into it. Normally, Southern California is pretty sunny and whatnot, but the winter, especially when we would work during Christmas holiday, it was a whole different vibe, and we were dressed in warmer clothes with scarves, and the decorations were everywhere, and there was a whole different level of magic, a different kind of feel that both we felt as cast members, and I think the guests felt as well.
Sure. Do you have any favorite stories of any of those interactions or those moments that you were just describing from any of the attractions that you worked?
Ironically, it's probably, I love the idea of telling people things to see that they would not normally see. At the time, this was I worked there from 1978 to 1984. And one of the things that I had discovered, I think, living so close to the hotel, was the old Dancing Water show that used to be performed every night back behind the hotel. And there were even hotel guests that never even knew about it, because it was sort of back there behind the pools and whatnot. I can remember many occasions I'd have people sitting behind me if I was in the front of a canoe, or were sitting in front of me if I was in the back, and I would be talking to them. I would ask where they're from, how they're enjoying the park, and then I'd say, well, how many days are you here for? And if they had time, I'd say, why don't you walk or take the monorail over to the Disneyland Hotel and catch the Dancing Water show? And every time if they were coming back into the park the next day, I had several people come back and specifically hunt me down and say they were so appreciative of me mentioning that, because they would never have known to go and see this show. And it was sort of off the beaten path almost. And so they would thank me profusely for giving them that. And that was always a joy to know that, I'd made their day an even better day. I think one of the most ironic or funny things that happened, I had a buddy of mine, Grant, who was being trained. He'd just been trained on the canoe ride, and I'd been working there a year. And I was pretty outgoing, and he was a little bit shy, as a lot of first-time people or workers are. And we had a canoe full of family, although we didn't know it was all one family. The canoes held 16 people. And it was a hot day, and we took the canoe out, and we started paddling, and they started splashing. And I stood up in the front, and I said, hey, folks, let's keep the water in the river. And they start paddling, and they started splashing. And so I turned around again, and I said, folks, there's a lot of people on board that probably don't want to get wet. And the dad or the leader of this whole family, all one group, said, well, we're all one family. We don't mind getting wet. I said, you really don't care if you get wet? And they said, no. And there was an older couple, maybe in their 60s or 70s. And I said, you guys don't mind getting wet? No, we love it. I took my 5.5-foot paddle and started shoveling water on everybody in that canoe, and they just had a ball. They could not see from the front to the back of the canoe. It just looked like a mound of water. And there was another canoe going by us. That the looks on the people in that canoe was just priceless. And so eventually I got them to stop splashing, and they just had a great time. And I said, okay, you guys, we got to keep paddling. And you can kind of keep splashing, but, you know, when we get out in front of back where the people are, I really appreciate if you don't splash. It could cost me my job. And so they were very good about it. They did what they told us. Of course, we brought the canoe in, and there was probably 6 inches of water in the canoe. And so Grant and I had to pull the canoe off. And the look on Grant's face when I started pouring water on these people with my paddle was just like, I'm going to get so fired. But ironically, as I'm pumping the water out, the head of this family comes back, and they're all wringing their clothes out. They're dripping wet. And he comes back, and he hands me a $5 bill. He said, I want you to know that was the most fun we've ever had at Disneyland. And I handed him the $5 back. I said, I cannot accept any tips or you know, and he shoved it in my pocket and says, you're taking it, you're keeping it, and that's final. And to this day, Grant, who is a very good friend of mine, still works there. He's been a long-term, 30-plus years working in the park. He still jokes with me saying, I still owe him $2.50. It was a $5 tip, and he felt that he was entitled to half that, which we always joke about. But, those are probably extremes. But things like that are always just, spur of the moment, ad-libbed moments. And, you know, I guess I could have gotten into some trouble. I felt pretty confident these people didn't mind getting wet, and it made their day. I mean, they were just, you know, you don't expect to get soaking wet on a ride at Disneyland, maybe outside of Splash Mountain. So right. I think it was really fun for them.
Wow, that's great. That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah.
Did you have anything when you were working the monorail? I know that there's much less guest interaction, but even at the time, they were allowing guests to ride up front at times, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah, this was still on the Mark 4 monorails, which were the ones with the bubble on top. These were the series before the 7s and came out, which were the ones that came over from Disney World, and then of course the new ones I think are Mark 8s or 9s. I can't remember what number they are, but the Mark 4s had a bubble, and that's where we steered from. We had a seat for two guests that could sit up in the bubble with the driver. Today the driver sits in the front, and they don't allow anybody security reasons, obviously. But that was fun. Again, the interaction was minimal because you usually only had two people to interact with, and it wasn't really an area I could talk to them and ask them how their day was and share some of the inner things I had talked about before. I think the funniest thing I did on monorail, I did by accident, and I could hear the laughs all the way back in the cars behind, at least in the car behind me, and we always had to give a spiel on the monorail. And the spiel would go something like, if I remember it, something like, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind you that Disneyland is open until midnight tonight. If you are planning to leave the park at any time, please remember to get your hand stamped at the monorail station or the Tomorrowland station so you can re-enter the park. Thank you, and have a great day here and not spare, I mean, Disneyland. And people would just bust up because I accidentally said, not, I don't know if I was thinking or somebody was talking about Knott's Berry Farm when I said it, and it got so many laughs, I kind of incorporated that in my spiel after I would say that little phrase, and it would always make everyone laugh. So, yeah, the opportunities weren't there as much, but we could still have fun.
Sure, yeah. So what did you love most about what you did?
Well, obviously what I've talked about in terms of just the daily, day in and day out magic and the feeling of being, working in a place that truly is magical to so many people. I mean, people come to the park expecting magic. I mean, obviously there are some people who come to the park and they're just determined not to have a good time. Luckily, that was very rare. There's something about, we did canoe races. Canoe races have been going on for well over 30 plus years, I think 40 years now. And these are races that are done by the employees. They're done at early in the morning. It starts at 5:30 in the morning, and they we make teams of 10 people. There's men, women, and mixed teams. And usually about 2,000 to 3,000 employees take part in this. Well, what was really interesting and fun for us who worked the park when people were there was coming to the park at 6 in the morning when it was empty, when there wasn't a sound, there wasn't a scream, there wasn't, you know, a ride going on, there wasn't a music. You could walk from Main Street all the way to Adventureland and not hear. The only thing you would hear, and I remember this was sort of the magic, they usually always left the animation on in the wishing well that is to the right of the main entrance to the castle, the Snow White wishing well. Mm-hmm. And the real airy voice, I forget the actress that played it. I know it was a famous person, but that they recorded the I'm Wishing song from Snow White. And you could hear that from almost anywhere in the park because it was so quiet. And there was, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia for people who worked there. Because when you worked at Disneyland, you were trained, you were told and taught a lot about Walt Disney. And so you gain a certain level of respect and certainly a level of understanding what Walt intended for the park. And it was his dream, and it was his... you know, he wanted to make this magic happen for so many people. And when you walk through the park and it's that quiet and it's that empty, you notoriously would think or feel the spirit, if you will, of Walt just kind of lingering in the air, especially if there was a little mist, a little fog. Sometimes in the early mornings of summer in June, you'd have the June gloom fog kind of come in, and it really, you could feel the presence, or you could feel that essence of Walt still overlooking his park. And we all felt it. I can honestly tell you, I don't know a single cast member, current or past, who probably did not feel that if they ever went to the park early in the morning before it was before other workers were there. It was something. I really have to say it was something to really capture you.
Oh, it sounds like it. Yeah, magic, or that connection and experience of the park on an entirely different level because of that sense of Walt being there.
And very few people. I mean, there are a lot of employees that work early in the morning. Usually. The heavy cleaning in the streets, they steam clean the streets every night and the walkways, and they replace light bulbs and everything like that. But they usually do that right after closing. So usually at 5 in the morning, there's not much left going on. There might be a few cast members who are drying some of the puddles and stuff from this cleaning. But overall, it was very quiet. And again, unless you did canoe racing, you seldom got to go to the park at that time and really get that experience. So I felt very blessed to be able to say and enjoy that part of the park that I would not have done otherwise if I hadn't probably done the canoe racing.
Oh, most definitely. And since we're on the subject of the canoe races, you had told me before we started recording, actually as we were corresponding before this, about upsetting the 3-year champions mm-hmm. with a team of rookie canoe ride operators. You kind of hinted at it earlier. Why don't you go ahead and tell that story?
Well, that was probably one of my biggest, being an athlete, having been a tennis player and a golfer for many years and playing collegiate tennis and a tennis pro for many years, I really enjoyed competitiveness. Well, my second year in the park, I hired too late the summer. I had already started the canoe race in early July when I was hired my first year. So my second year in the park, I had witnessed and found out about the canoe team Engulf and Devour, which was made up of mainly the lifeguards from the Disneyland Hotel. And these were very big, bulky, very strong, very athletic guys. And they had a canoe team that had won every year, at least for 3 years, and maybe even longer than that. And nobody had even touched their time. And for those that are listening who don't understand or know about the canoe races, they use the canoes that are used by the canoe ride, and they have 10 people with a steerer in the back and 9 paddlers, and you go around the island for time. It's very precise. They have a start and finish line. They have a laser beam that actually measures the time up to at least a tenth of a second, maybe even closer to a hundredth of a second now, because the races are usually very close. And each canoe goes around the island for time. And there's a series of heats, and then there's quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. And the finals are made up of the four fastest teams in each division. And they're big. I mean, this is the only time that Disneyland actually opens their doors for free to people that want to come in and watch the canoe races at 6 in the morning. And so it is a chance for non-cast members to actually come into the park and kind of see the park when it is very, very quiet that one day out of the year. Engulfing the Devourer was heavily favored. I had picked up a team. I had made up a canoe team of all first-year rookie canoe ride operators, except for our steer. I got a guy named Carl who had been working the park a long time. But what I did was I picked guys who were tiny, the smallest guys who worked the canoes I could find, because the canoes are heavy enough, and you put a guy who weighs 200 pounds and a guy who weighs 100 pounds, there's a lot less drag with the lighter weight guys, and you multiply that by 10 guys. So I picked a group of guys that were very small. And to make a long story short, we came into the final round with the fastest time by about a second. And there was another team called the Entertainment Team that was went out, and another team, Parking Lot, I believe. And Entertainment and then Engulf and Devour went out, and they were tied with the exact same time, which was 4 minutes, 11 seconds, and 8/10 of a second. And no one had ever tied in the canoe races, and this was before my team went out. So we were out on the river, and we came across the finish line. Of course, at that time, everybody was thinking nobody could beat Engulf and Devour. Even though we had the fastest time, they still didn't think we, a bunch of rookies, could win it. Well, they were trying to figure out a tie breaking when we came across the finish line. And we came across, and that time, the big digital clock only read the minutes and the seconds. And our time was 4 minutes, 11 seconds. But we didn't know the tenths. We knew we had to be 4:11.8. And we sat in the water what seemed like eternity. And you could hear a pin drop in the Bear Country area, where all these hundreds of people were waiting to see and hear if we indeed had won. And then finally the announcement came, official time for Bad News Canoes, 4:11.4. So we
won
by 4/10 of a second, and we were crowned the champs, and it was just a amazing thing. I mean, we all just jumped in the water and celebrated like you wouldn't believe. So yeah, it was a big upset. And the following years, we ended up being second, third, and then my final year working in the park, working in the West Side, I put that same team together again, and we won. We won it my last year, so I felt like pretty good about going out a canoe champion again on my last year of work.
Definitely, yeah, it seems like a good way to go out.
Yeah, it was fun and memorable, and certainly enjoyed. Feeling like I did what I accomplished to do, and the guys were great. I mean, one of the things that made canoe racing fun, I always had a men's team and a women's team. And my women's team, we were usually pretty good, but we never won. We were always in top four, but, it was more just for fun. The guys were the competitive group, but we always took our men's team and our women's team, I always took them out to spaghetti at the old spaghetti factory in Newport Beach every year. And mm-hmm. It was just a lot of camaraderie and fun. And of course, the guys and the girls, we all got along because we all worked in the same area. So all my canoe teams were always made up of the same people in the same working area. So, it's just another one of those things that, beyond the magic of working in the park, when you get that many cast members together and young and fairly outgoing, there's a lot of ways to have fun, not just at the park.
Right. Now, I want to transition away from the parks for a bit, and then we'll come back to it towards the end of the interview.
On September 22nd, 2004, Oceanic Flight 815 left Sydney, Australia, bound for Los Angeles, and crashed on a remote and mysterious island somewhere in the South Pacific. The survivors quickly realized this was no ordinary island.
The groundbreaking Emmy Award-winning drama Lost ran on ABC television from September 22, 2004 to May 23, 2010, and remains to this day one of the greatest television series of all time. Relive every moment of this amazing series as we reopen the hatch and take you deep inside each episode of this epic series. My name is Joyce.
And I'm Al. And on our show, Lost Flight 815, we'll cover each episode of this immensely popular series in a unique way. We'll watch the show as we record and share our thoughts and Lost facts while you listen to the episode with us.
So tune in to the Lost 815 podcast and visit us on the web at www.lostflight815.com and relive one of the greatest shows of all time.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at LostFlight815.
That brings us to the end of this week's show. A special thank you to David Smith for being my guest on this episode, and to you for listening. Come back next week for part two. If you've worked for the Walt Disney Company and would like to share a positive story, email me at podcast@storiesofthemagic.com or call the listener feedback line at 734-23-STORY anytime 24 hours a day. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please let me know. And if you're a Disney guest of any Disney experience or had an encounter or an interaction with a cast member that made some extra Disney magic, or if you've had any special Disney experience you want to share, I'd love to hear from you too. Do you have a fun memory from riding on the Davy Crockett Explorer canoes? Or maybe remember the Mike Fink keel boats? I'd love to hear about it. Of course, you're welcome to call in with any story about the Disney cast members, artists, Imagineers, anybody from the company that's done something that means a lot to you or that's made some magic for you. Please subscribe to Stories of the Magic in iTunes, on the website, or through Stitcher Radio. If you already have the Stitcher app for your mobile device, you can add the show directly. And if not, go to stitcher.com/storiesofthemagic to download the app and have this show added automatically. If you like the show, please rate and review Stories of the Magic in iTunes. Those ratings help make the podcast more visible there, so it's easier for people to find. Leaving a rating and a review will only take a couple of minutes, and I'd be very grateful to you. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or other feedback, visit storiesofthemagic.com and leave a comment on the show notes for this or any episode. While you're there, check out the show notes for useful links from each episode. Oh, we're now on Twitter. Follow the podcast at twitter.com/storiesofmagic. Yes, there is no the. The name was too long with all the words in it, so I've left that one out. Just twitter.com/storiesofmagic. Please follow me there. Finally, please like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/storiesofthemagic. Yes, the is in that one. Share the page. Tweet out that you're listening, which should be easier now that we're actually on Twitter. Pin it on Pinterest. Whatever, let your friends know about the show. Tell them that you're listening so they can join in the fun. Remember that I'm on episode 53 of Tales from the Mouse House to talk about Disneyland during the holidays, share a new story about some cruises coming up that you're not going to want to miss, and announce an exclusive contest. Also, I'm raising money for Children's Hospital of Orange County, and I'd very much appreciate your support. Visit storiesofthemagic.com/chalkwalk2012 for details and to sponsor me. While you're on the web, go to Debbie's blog, makingmagicandmemories.com, for even more positive stories from cast members and guests. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Stories of the Magic. There will be other days and other stories, and this tale continues next time.
You've been listening to Stories of the Magic with Randy Crane. If you have feedback, want to share a story of your own, or even be a guest on the show, write to Randy at podcast@storiesofthemagic.com or call our listener feedback line 734-23-STORY. And don't forget to visit the website storiesofthemagic.com for show notes from this and every episode and to leave your comments. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, live your dreams and make the magic in your world.